This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with SharePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.
Hello and welcome to the Twin Peaks Investing Podcast. My name is Peter Higgins and you can find me at Conkers3. And I'm here with my co-host, Peter, at Weedy Dealer on Twitter. This is Twin Peaks Investing number 68. And we're once again recording this live on video. I want to thank all of you for putting up with our ugly mugs in the last podcast, which we put out live as a shock to see how it would go. And we're absolutely beside ourselves, really, in the sense of you guys actually turned up in numbers in comparison to, you know, just a flat screen with a picture, to actually look at us and what we were talking about and getting to know our little isms and schisms. And we're sitting here going up from a couple of hundred listening to our podcast via YouTube. We're on the cusp of hitting nearly 800 views. Doesn't sound a lot, but for two guys who are sitting in there, basically in their offices and front rooms, you know, in Windsor and Leicester, that's a lot for us. So thank you all for that have visited us on YouTube. Really, really appreciate it. Thanks for your feedback. Pete?
Yeah. Hello, everyone.
People wanted to see your ugly mush, mate.
I'm really pleased with the response we had. And I'm so pleased that I've actually moved my camera and had a makeover and, you know, combed me hair, mate. You know how it is. And polished me glasses. So I'm on top form. I didn't put a tie on.
No, you don't need ties, mate.
Oh, dear. So, no, I mean, you know, it's great that people watched it. And what's really pleasing is that people are still listening. And hopefully we'll keep it so that even though we're going to use the video format going forward, it will still work as a podcast. We don't want to destroy it as an audio only thing, you know?
Yeah, we won't change anything. It's just the beauty of the fact it's being recorded now. And that's it. We're just helping it go onto another platform. And those people that, you know, want to put it through their, you know, smart TVs and watch it on big screen, they can do. Those that want to carry on listening to it whilst they're going for a walk and also listen to it whilst they're traveling various different locations, they can do that as well. It's just another little vehicle for us to see what happens with it.
That's the thing, isn't it? It's like having the video, you get a little bit more emphasis and nuance. And I saw quite a few comments on that on Twitter where people say, you know, seeing you actually talking about it, we can see your enthusiasm and your sort of excitement for it. And I think that extra nuance really helps, you know.
Absolutely. I mean, the thing for me and the most important thing is that Pete and I will always just going to tell it like it is. We're not going to change anything because there's a video now in front of us. We're just going to be the way that we are. I might have to shave now on a Tuesday or a Wednesday. And whilst I'm saying that, we're recording this on Tuesday. Yeah. Oh, yeah, and do my hair as well. So it's the 8th of February. Lots of people had a volatile January. It was vile. Opening on a lot of stocks that are beloved by lots and lots of people. It just did not turn out to be a good January for lots of stocks. But we're back, we're past that now. We're sitting in February. Market remains volatile. Tech stocks are still getting sold off. It's going to be a very, very interesting February going forward. The old adage of what happens in January gives you a bit of a view of what's going to happen with the stock market. I'm not sure about that. I never have been, not just this year. So we'll see what happens. We're sitting, Pete, today with the FTSE having a little bit of a flat day, a bit of indecision, really. We're still sitting near 52-week highs. And the stock market, FTSE 100, touched today at 7631, a high of the day, a low of 7548, the low of the day. And it closed at 7567, just down 6 points. FTSE All Share, 4-2-3-3, down just 3 points. Aim down 3 points again, 0.29% at 1,082. So not a bad day today, really. A lot of indecision. Nobody knows. It's just holding up as such, the markets. No one really knows what's going to happen next.
I think it's interesting that the FTSE 100 actually cracked that 7,600 level, even though it fell back later. The fact that it's been able to push through is a bit of a sign that it can probably get back up there again, and I expect it to do that. If you look on a short-term chart, probably the best is a three-month chart. You can see it there on the screen, perhaps. You should be able to see there's a definite triangle. Move my finger. There's a definite triangle there where it's squeezing from underneath, and there's like a flat top. And that basically squeezed it until it popped out the top. And that's what happened today. Now, I saw this was looking like it could happen. And last night I added to that FTSE 100 index spread bet long, you know, trading system thing that we talked about on another podcast. People can look on my website. It's all about it. I added to that. And I've taken it up from £3 a point to £5 a point. So I didn't add a lot because I don't want to take on loads of risk. To me, the system is still in its test. But it's done well. You know, I've been running it 7 or 8 months and it was up something like 28% when I added to it last night. So I've zeroed it again and I'm going to sort of measure it from the point where I've zeroed it now.
The interesting thing about what's going on at the minute is that it keeps hitting that sort of little resistance there, Pete, right? So we've had the 52-week high of 7611. Yeah, that's our 52-week high. The resistance, as I said before,
we went over that today.
Yeah, I'm just about to say that. We went over that today, and we actually hit 7631. But what we need to get past is 7674, which takes us back to February of last year. Now, once we've cleared that and the markets relax about interest rates, inflation and price of oil, price of gas, electric, we could see the markets move higher. My concern remains the same, Pete. I'm cautious on the markets. I'm trimming various different stocks. Mm. I'm buying where I see a bit of value. I want to see the FTSE 250 show a bit of strength because that's the engine, really.
Yeah.
And that will drag the FTSE 250 and the all share higher again beyond 7,700 for the FTSE 100. And if we can see that happen, 7,700, I think the market will then consolidate for a little while. The stocks that are sitting there unloved, I think they will find it, get another little lease of life, and we could see the markets actually do well. But there's a wall of noise and worry still, you know, going on regarding,
we talked about it on podcast 67, where we were saying there are so many factors, you know, Ukraine, higher interest rates, political problems in the UK. I mean, you know, it's just countless high valuations, all these things. And all of that is so clouding the picture. And like you, I'm cautious. I mean, I only added cautiously to that FTSE 100 test system last night because it's been something I've been meaning to do for quite a while. I want to make the test more meaningful. And now with, you know, £37,000 long exposure, it's going to be a bit more meaningful and a little bit more scary because it's real money. But, you know, I'm still cautious and I'm not really doing much with my normal share portfolio. I'm 100% invested pretty much. I bought more PHP, primary health properties, in my income portfolio last week. And, you know, I see that as a really boring, tedious income defensive stock. And by buying it last week, I was hopefully locking in a yield of sort of 4.5% going forward. Typically, it dropped after I bought it, which was really annoying because I thought I'd waited long enough and I thought I'd caught the turn quite nicely, but the damn thing continued to drop. So the yield on it now is probably up to like 4.8%. A little bit annoying, but that's life. Long term, going forward, I'm very happy sitting on Primary Health Properties. I think that's going to be a lovely little income stock that's just going to sit there. I don't need to worry about it. There was talk today in Parliament about the health service and the things they're doing there, more money going in. They're going to need these health centres, you know, there's no doubt about it. They're going to need more of them. I can see PHP expanding in Ireland and more in the UK. So I think it looks a nice little stock to be holding.
Well, the thing with that particular stock, Pete, you won't have long to wait because it's saying here on the 16th of February, they're going to be coming out with their preliminary results. So if the bottom's not in by the 16th, and it comes out with good news, the bottom will definitely be in once that good news comes out on the 16th. So, you know, it bodes well. You've only got to wait until next Friday, mate, and you'll know what's going on.
Yeah, I'll probably get a profit warning.
Good news. Say again?
My luck, we'll probably get a profit warning.
Oh, hopefully not. Hopefully not. Talking of profit warnings, Pete, one stock today, which again has been disappointing. I'll talk about the one that disappointed that I own next after this one. Ocado, online grocery and delivery business, slumped again today after announcement of its full-year results that missed both earnings and revenue forecast. We were talking about the likes of all the online retailers and those that, you know, were having a real, real good time during 2020 and 2021 regarding everyone shopping online. So I can't get to the bottom, really, of why they're struggling to generate the revenue that they've always said they're going to generate. You know, and they're trying to claim that it's because they've invested so much money on their ongoing technology investment. Revenues were up 7%, but it just seems to be that the cash burn is just keeps going and going and going and going. You know, so I'm not sure when they're going to get to the point where they hit targets, if that makes sense, and forecasts.
Yeah, I mean, you can sort of understand the profit being hit if they've been investing more money. But there's no excuse for the revenue growth being pretty pedestrian, is there? Especially when they'd signed up this big deal with Marks and Spencer, and that seemed to be going so well. So I'm sort of struggling to understand that.
Yeah, it's a difficult one. It really is, because I thought that the Marks and Spencer deal would actually add to their revenues and add to the deal making and add to other people thinking, well, it's good enough for Marks and Spencer's, and it's good enough, you know, for others. But it's not happening at all for them at the minute. And then that goes on to go on.
I'm just looking on SharePad. Oh, okay. There's no forecast showing. I mean, it's got a 9.2 billion market cap today. That's at £12.25. That is one heck of a meaty market cap for a company that's losing money. So yeah, well, holders have to decide what they want to do, because it looks really weak on the share. I mean, it's in a downtrend channel and looks weak. Yeah. So I wouldn't be surprised if it goes lower.
It's possibly going lower. It's going to lose a lot of. I mean, each time you come out with a profit warning, people lose faith in the actual stock, and that's no different to my stock, which got smashed today. I've held it with a view that, you know, they've got a relationship with Amazon. They're in the big data cloud space. They're going to eventually, you know, do well. Eventually, they're going to get away from the Hewlett-Packard anchor where they made that massive acquisition.
MCRO. And
it's never gone right for them. So Micro Focus, which I hold, got smashed today by 10%, Pete. You know, said its revenue had continued to decline despite narrowing losses. So the problem they've got, really, is that if you're still making losses, if your revenues are still declining, how do you get rid of, because they've got a mountain of debt as well. So they got smashed again. You know, loss after tax was substantially narrowed, £500,000 loss. So I'm like thinking, you know what? Is that are they going to get out of their own way regarding revenue regeneration? Or is somebody else that's going to come and go, right, enough is enough. Let's put these guys out of the misery, you know? But they've got debt, Pete, and they're going to pay a dividend. I'm like, that doesn't make up for the shares dropping 10% today, mate. Thank you very much. You know what I mean?
Wow. Looking at SharePad, it's on a forecast PE of 4, rising 2 years out to 4.5. That's obviously going the wrong way because the PE should be getting lower. But the scary thing is the debt, as you say, it's got a 1.367, so 1.367 billion market cap. But SharePad is showing the debt at over 4 billion. So, yeah, it doesn't. Yep. Not a pretty situation.
Yeah, I didn't go through the results with a fine tooth comb. I'm not sure if the debt's come down a little bit since then. But it's just shocking, Pete.
Looking at the chart, it's had the sort of big falls years ago, if you like. I'll just show it. Right. Yeah. So should be able to see it there where basically it had the big falls. When was it? Sort of like 2019, sort of through to 2021. Since that, the last year or so, it's really been just going sideways. And, you know, it's in that sort of rehab phase, really.
Yeah, I've just pulled it up again now. Net debt, 4.195, as you say, versus market cap of 1.5 billion. If you can't generate the revenue, yeah, you can't get rid of the debt quick enough. You know, they should not even be paying me or any shareholder a dividend whilst they're saddled with 4.1 or whatever it is of debt.
It's just crazy.
Well, we'll see.
What's your thinking on it? Are you thinking you're going to stick with it or do you think are?
My average price is sub £3. My hope, obviously, when I do these sort of some of the parts sort of purchases for recovery is that the company recovers. You know what I mean? And then they start generating greater and greater revenue. And then other people think, oh, crikey, these guys have turning the big tanker around. And the debt reduces. Other people see them as attractive and maybe they get bought out or they actually get to the point where they're worth £5, they're worth £7. You know, that's my hope. They're selling off the key parts they don't want, the non-core parts of the business. But it's not enough to get rid of 4.195 of debt, billions of debt. So my thinking at the moment is I'm going to hold on. I'm going to see what they do for the next update. I'm going to wait and see where the share price goes. I'm still in profit on the stock. But one of the things I'm conscious about and the mistakes I keep making is putting too much faith in management that keep disappointing. So I'll probably try and put in a stop loss, which I don't often use stop losses. I tend to put manual ones in my head and write down on paper. And when it comes to that price, I then consider what's going on and why it's got there. But I might actually put a stop in so that manually and mechanically it's taken out of my control. So if it hits this particular price, it takes me out rather than me going and finding reasons why I should stay on board. So I might do that. So I come out with some profit if it goes back too low towards £3.
Have you got any stocks that you wouldn't mind buying, new stocks?
Well, we're going to talk about that a bit later on regarding what posed that question. I've been buying some stocks, mate. I've been buying some stocks, yeah. I've got my eye on my watch list.
To me, if it was me, if I was in profit 30-odd%, which is what you are, because you know, it's £4 today, you paid £3. To me, it'd be a no-brainer. I would literally move on. Sell and move on. That's what I'd do. Anyway.
Yeah, that's a fair point. I mean, the thing is, Pete, I've done my research on stocks like this. And if somebody was, and I'm looking at who could buy this, what would the acquirer pay for this? And it's not £4. They're not going to let this company go for £4. Could it stay lower than £4 over the next 12 months? Absolutely, categorically, yes. You know, I've already had a dividend from it. I'm going to get another one. So that takes my price nearer to £4.50 already for the shares. Yeah. So that puts me up almost 50% already. I'd be happy to sell them to somebody for £8 if anybody wants to take them. Happy as days. You know what I mean? Yeah. But it may not happen this year. They need to get out of their own way and generate revenue. I wrongly thought that with the Amazon results that came out last week, they were, and their main growth was the AWS side of their business, right?
Yeah.
Obviously, Micro Focus has got a link to Amazon with this, blah, 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 blah. And I thought, what if a little bit of that's rubbed off on Micro Focus? Today told me that the answer is categorically no. You know what I mean? Yeah. And the share price has been absolutely smashed. So I have to wait a bit longer now to see what happens with regards to
the way to be valuing this is to think, instead of thinking price to earnings and stuff, which is effectively the same as when you do price to earnings, it's like the share price divided by the earnings per share. That's the same as the market cap divided by the total earnings in millions of pounds. So what you can do is use enterprise value divided by the earnings. So in that case, you'd be adding 4.1 billion of borrowing to the 1.3 billion of debt, getting an enterprise value, dividing that by the earnings, which would probably bang the PE up to more like 20 or something. So it wouldn't look as cheap then, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, if somebody wants to buy it, they're going to have to take the debt, obviously. That goes without saying. But I tend to do my calculations on the sum of the parts, Pete. What is the intrinsic value of the business? And it's beyond six billion. So that's why I bought it. They're paying me a dividend now, which I don't want. I want them to get rid of the debt, but I'll take it whilst I'm waiting, mate, and see what happens. I'll give them another 3 to 6 months, maybe a year, see what happens and see what develops. And hopefully they'll get out their own way and generate some revenue.
Yeah, that makes sense. Mate, we were talking about the indexes. What we didn't mention was the US ones. And looking at those, I mean, today when we're speaking, so this is about 6:30 on Tuesday, the 8th of February, the NASDAQ is currently up. It's been very sort of sideways and not doing much for the last few days, really. But it's interesting that it is forming a bit of a triangle again over the last sort of like 2 weeks. And obviously we need it to break to the upside. And if it can do that, which on the NASDAQ comp, means getting closing over 14,500. If it can close over 14,500, that would be quite a positive development. And hopefully, you know, if we could see that in the next few days, that would really change the tenor of the markets, because at the moment, the narrative is that NASDAQ's massively overvalued. To be honest, I think that it's a narrative I buy into. The narrative is that the NASDAQ's massively overvalued, but maybe it's still going to defy us all and manage to rise up. So, I mean, the real crunch is whether it can break up above that level, or worst case, it goes below the low of that nasty Monday, which looks to me around about 13,000 or something. If it goes below 13,000, we're in real trouble.
Yeah, it's obviously, we go back a little ways now, Pete. The 52-week high, 16,202. 52-week low, 12,397. It opened today at 13,984, and it's sitting at 14,155 at the minute. And if you look onto a three-month chart, Pete, you're looking at the next sort of resistance, as you say, sitting at 14,417. And then after that, the next resistance really is 14,900. So, you know, 15. You want 14,900, and you're back where everyone's loving up on the tech stocks again. I think there's a lot of headwinds out there, Pete. Oh. You know, a couple of them are getting smashed tech-wise. You know, we, in betwixt the last podcast and this podcast, PayPal got absolutely smashed. Yeah.
Facebook. I hold it, so it killed me.
Facebook got absolutely smashed. Amazon, there or thereabouts. Microsoft, again, did okay. There's more coming down the pipe tech-wise as to who's going to be okay. And that's going to power the NASDAQ. The NASDAQ gets in a situation where there's quite a few of their larger stocks do well. And again, everyone falls in love with it again. You know, we talked about all these different entities UK-wise that are exposed to some of these, you know, funds and also other entities exposed to some of these US behemoths. And if they sneeze, Pete, we get the cough, as you said. It's just one of them things. Right now, today, it's up 1%. But by the time we finish this podcast, that 1% could evaporate in a heartbeat because someone said something. You know, we were taking the mickey out of Peloton only a couple of weeks ago. Now there's talk that X, Y, and Z is potentially considering buying Peloton. You know what I mean? So
it's really interesting how, and we touched on it with Ocado, how a lot of the things that happen during lockdown, so the sort of habits, if you like, that individuals got into during lockdown, they haven't endured. I mean, you know, Peloton's probably one of the best examples. Well, there's Peloton, there's Netflix, there's Ocado, as we said, there's Boohoo, there's, you know, so many stocks that were the darlings during lockdown. Now they're just all coming out with warnings and having a terrible time. So it's remarkable how things switch. I don't often do this, but I must say I've done it a little bit more recently. I've got in the habit of watching a little bit of CNBC for only like half an hour while I'm having my lunch or something, around sort of like, say, 12:30 or 1 o'clock, whatever it is. Catching Jim Cramer and all that sort of stuff, you know, which is great, great entertainment, you know. But thing that really hit me yesterday, they were talking about how much the Russell 2000, which is the US small cap index, if you like, how much that was down this year. And it was something bonkers, like 25% down this year since January the 1st. That's staggering, isn't it?
Wow.
I mean,
like you say, this is the problem with small caps. When they're doing well, they're absolutely fine. But if they have a problem, or if the market falls out of love with them, boy, oh boy. You know what I mean?
Interesting.
You really are getting smashed.
With the UK small caps, which is really the sort of area that I tend to be most interested in these days, I'm actually starting to see quite a bit of value. You know, when I'm looking through the earnings reports and looking at the valuations in the morning, which I tweet out and stuff, I'm seeing quite a few things now where I'm saying this looks cheap, or this looks good value, or yeah, this could be interesting. You know, more than I was certainly a few months ago when there was nothing worth buying.
The opportunities are there, Pete. We just need to do a bit of digging. And it's best to do the digging before someone else comes in and tells you it's a good idea. As I always say, I just want to go back just a little bit, Pete, and this will fall into your wheelhouse here, your flavors that you like.
Yeah.
And if you recognize the ticker symbol is HOG in the US. Do you know what that is, Pete?
Harley's, rum, rum.
Harley Davidson. Yeah. Harley Davidson today, Pete.
Nick is going to love this.
15%, right?
Yeah.
Harley Davidson stock is gaining 15% today after the company reported a profit of 15 cents per share, beating estimates. You see, beating estimates. Some companies can actually beat estimates versus the loss of 34 cents a share, yeah? On sales of 816 million, above expectations of $699 million. Absolutely smashed it out of the park, mate. So there you go. So we're talking about the last podcast, you know, they're buying yachts, people are painting yachts. Now they're buying Harley Davidson's, mate. And they've also got an electric Harley, which my mate has got. My mate Nick's got an electric Harley, mate. So if you ever want to have a little ride on one of them, mate, even the Pillion, you can get on one of them.
Strap me on.
Strap me on tight.
Really? Yeah, so tight.
Yeah, so that's what's going on there, mate. So, yeah, just surprised me because I'm thinking, Harley Davidson, what's happening there? Someone taking it over? Because it's a sort of company where the US government will go, no one's buying that unless they're American, sort of thing, you know? But yeah, up 15% today, mate. Absolutely smashed it.
Amazing.
This is a quick hello to you, our valued Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener. Whatever channel you're listening to, please make sure to subscribe and you'll always be the first to get the new episodes. Thank you for your continued support.
Mate, go for it.
I want you to tell everybody about the charity. Tell them about the page it's on and let's get them flying in and making donations to your wonderful charity, mate. Go for it.
Fantastic. So last year, obviously, we helped the Memphis charity, which is one near Peter. This year, we're helping the Backup Trust, which is a charity that sort of does help spinally injured people. I'm spinally injured myself because I'm paraplegic, paralyzed from the chest down, obviously a wheelchair user, which is why I would need a lot of strapping on to get me on a Harley, I'll tell you. But so they do a lot of great work, particularly with kids, where they run things like skiing courses where paraplegics and tetraplegics, the people who haven't got used to their arms and their hands, they could often have a bit of mobility in their arms, can you know, go skiing and stuff. And they do outward bound courses and they do things like wheelchair skills courses, which are incredibly useful things to do. And a lot of it is about the sort of psychological adjustment of having such a life-changing thing from being someone who can walk about and do all that kind of stuff to suddenly being stuck in a wheelchair or whatever. So, you know, it's a great charity, well worth supporting. I've been on one of their skiing things years ago, and it's all good stuff. Anyway, we've set them up. They did the work, not me. A Just Giving page, which is www.justgiving.com/fundraising/TwinPeaks. That's it, actually. It's that simple. And if you go to that, it should come up with the screen and stuff. I'm sure Pete will put it on the link and that when he's setting up the thing, and it will probably be down. It'll probably be down here below the screen, I'm sure. And yeah, you know, give all your money away. I'm sure they'll love it. You know, they won't moan with that.
No, that's brilliant, Pete. I'm really pleased because they have. They've followed both of our accounts. They're going to see what we're up to. So if anybody can support Pete, we're going to be having that backup charity as our Twin Peaks charity of the year. So we're going to be promoting that throughout the year. So if you want to just go onto that page, having listened to this, brilliant, and make a big donation, absolutely fantastic. We did really well with the Twin Peaks challenge last year. We'd love to do the same for the backup charity. They do some fantastic work. Pete's told me all about it. So let's just do what we can. This, as you all know, is a free to air sort of podcast. This is just you guys, ladies and gents, saying thank you to Pete and I by supporting a charity that Pete supports and has received support from them as well. So it's brilliant to be able to, it's just our way of giving back. You know, this is what it's all about.
Totally. I mean, and don't, I mean, if you can only give us a fiver, give a fiver. I mean, it doesn't matter, you know, just anything you can contribute would be great, you know. Anyway, right, Pete, you had something that come up on Twitter today, I believe.
Yes, you've just prompted me. I was going to go somewhere else, but I'll go to that.
Okay. That's brilliant.
Absolutely thrilled. No, we have a mutual friend on Twitter, just the one. And his name or his Twitter handle is Bounce Trade, at Bounce Trade, Pete. And actually his tweet was from yesterday, and I find this is quite an intriguing tweet, so that's why I just thought it'd be good for us to just chew it over and also talk about some of the replies that Bounce got. So yeah. his account is called Bounce Capital and it's at Bounce Trade. So hello there, Bounce Trade, hopefully you're listening to us and hopefully this helps with your thoughts and processes. So the question was, I have spotted a very good company I want to buy, full stop. Problem is, what to sell? Serious question, full stop. How do you guys fund new position if must raise cash, question mark? Do you sell winners or losers? exclamation mark, exclamation mark. Right. Some of the replies here from our good friend at Treasy T. Tally at Treasy T.
Hi, Treasy.
Replies. Revisit losers. Look at percentage down and ask yourself if anything has changed. Is it realistic that company will recover, or are you still holding on a wing and a prayer? Question mark. Another reply from at Whole Wit. You need to define winners and losers. In my opinion, it's not about what you've made or lost the most money in. Good shares trend up along with increasingly good fundamentals. Bad shares are opposite. Sell the ones going down, wink. Buy when the market thinks the same as you thought about the company. Then we've got the secret accountant. Personally, I rarely sell, but I'd sell a winner. Rightly or wrongly, I struggle to sell losers if nothing has fundamentally changed with the loser from when I bought it. Okay, and Bounce actually replied, I typically do the same, mate. I sell the winners. One strategy I use is to sell trusts when a big discount closes and I have made outsized gains. I do have a problem. I do probably leave a little bit on the table. You know, so there's lots of different discussions there. We'll find another one here. The quality small cap investor at growth-invest1. Give yourself a clean slate and run through your portfolio saying, if I was building a portfolio today, would I buy this company? If you answer no to any of your holdings, then that is a good indication. I think that's a really, really good reply there. There's lots more, but I just wondered what your thoughts were on that one, Pete, and what is it that you do?
Yeah, I mean, I bashed out a tweet this morning in reply to that. And my sense of it, I think it was Whole Wit in the list you read out who sort of hit my thinking on it in terms of it's not really whether they're a winner or a loser. It's sort of for you. It's like your entry price hasn't really got anything to, you know, your entry price and whether you're in a profit or whether you're in a loss from that, the relative move in the prices has got nothing to do with whether it's a great company or not or whatever. So for me, it comes back to what the last person said, which was, you know, it's about looking at each stock on its own individual merits and thinking to yourself, well, has that one, you know, had a good run? It's a great winner for me. I've let it run. It's got momentum. There's lots of good stuff. But my goodness, it's getting overvalued now. And I'm getting a little bit worried about X, Y, Z or whatever. And just think, okay, that's the one that's going to go. Or, of course, an alternative is you might actually find that you could top slice one or two of your winners, which would free up cash, which would enable you to buy the new share. Of course, the risk with that is it then gives you an extra holding. So you may have problems with portfolio limits, because I've introduced a thing where I've got a maximum of 40 stocks in my sort of normal, what I call my normal portfolio, the WD-40. And I've got a maximum of 15 in my income portfolio. And I'm very strict now about those slots. I won't go over the number. So you need to, if you've got a kind of limit, which I think is a good thing to have, because it stops you getting in that problem where you just end up with loads and loads and loads of stocks, which is so easy to do. It's so easy to become a collector. So I would assess each on its merits. And as Treasy said, you know, if you've got a stock that's a loser, you've got to dispassionately really, really analyze it and think, well, is this really likely to recover? Or is it one where I'm just going to end up, it's going to go to zero, and I'm going to lose my shirt on it, you know? So, yeah, it's a case of looking at each individual stock on its merits, I think. I think selling a winner is a very dangerous thing to do. If it's as black and white as sell a winner or sell a loser, I would say sell your losers. because the thing is, winners have momentum. If they are, you know, how does it, I try to think how it would look for people watching. Is it like that? Or is it like, yeah, like that. So it's like, if it's trending up, see, now we got cameras, we've got a whole new world of audio visual experience. So if it's trending up, which might be that way, or it might be that way, if it's trending up, you know, let it run because it's got momentum. And it's only once it gets ridiculously high and the valuation gets really stupid and you start feeling really, you know, scared with it, that it's time to get rid of it. Certainly top slicing makes sense.
I, for some time now, I've not had a problem with having cash in the portfolio. However, when I'm looking to buy something new, as I have been doing year to date, I've been looking at the stocks which have fallen either out of love with or simply haven't delivered. I very rarely will opt. I don't think I've ever opted to sell a winning stock, you know, in order to buy something new. I top sliced Angle recently, which was up significantly for me, because I wanted to buy something new. I didn't want to add new money to the market. That's why I did it on that occasion. But like yourself, I'm looking on the occasions that it's happened in the past, and I will probably do it again. If I don't want to add enough new money to the market, I will look at the stocks that I'm like, really? Again? You know, what's going on with this? It's not happened nowhere. The market's doing well, reasonably okay. This stock still hasn't done okay. What is wrong with this stock? Why is it walking in treacle? And that will be the one I get rid of. That's the one I would look to get rid of. I wouldn't look at the one that's done really well for me and go, ordinarily, well, that's done well. I'll grab that profit there. Whilst another stock is going like that, it will be the one that's on the base that's gone nowhere. Hopefully it's not minus, but if it is minus, I'll be like, let me see if that stock there has done better. But what you've got, what the other thing to think about is this. You have a portfolio of stocks, whether that be 5, whether that be 25 or 40 is in your case, Pete. Does that new stock you're looking at, is it better than those 5 or those 40 that you've got already? That's the most important thing. If it's really that much better than all of the other components of your portfolio, then it means that X amount of stocks in your portfolio aren't as good as the one that you're looking at. So it's an easy choice. So choose from the ones that aren't as good as the one you're buying. And irrespective of whether they're losing in the middle or high, get rid of that one then. It makes it easy. Because you should be looking at that new stock if your portfolio is okay and all the stocks in your portfolio are actually you've got conviction on. You know, because the easiest sign of conviction in a stock is when it gets hit by 5, 10 or 15%, you will get rid of it in a heartbeat. There won't be any like, oh, I'm not even thinking about it. Like, bang, you've sold it.
Yeah.
But if it's sitting there flatlining, just ebbing and flowing and blah, 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 you're sitting quite dandy watching the market and thinking, okay, I'll keep that. The minute it drops 5 and 10, 15% later, you've sold it. I've seen it so many times. There's people talking about I'm 50%, 60%, 80% cash. Why? Because they're concerned about the market. What triggered them? Volatility. Yeah? The markets have been going up and we're nearer to 52-week highs right now. Is it the time to buy a brand new idea? I don't know. I've done it. Is it the right thing to do? I don't know. Right? The interesting thing about selling is that it's far more difficult, and it always has been, it always will be, than it is to buy a stock. You can find all the reasons to buy a new stock. The difficult one, the psychology one, is how and when to sell. We all struggle with it. I struggle with it.
Oh, yeah.
We all struggle with it.
No doubt.
And that's the bit we've got to educate ourselves and read more on and find the reasons. You know, someone could do something. You know what? I simple strategy. It's gone below the 200-day moving average. I'm selling it. What? That works for some people.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, they don't look at any fundamentals. They look at the chart tells them everything, in, out, gone. Everyone's different. The only answer I can give to Bounce that he should do is go with his gut, go with what he wants to do. It's his money.
Yeah, I think you've made me think of some really, really sort of angles on that. Look, from the last one, you said go with your gut. I think there's a lot to be said for that. I think one of the things I would add is, don't rush the decision. Don't literally think, oh, I really like this new stock. I spent ages looking at that. I'm now going to whiz through my portfolio. Oh, I don't like that when it's gone. You know, don't do that. look through, take your time, consider them. The share you want to buy will still be there tomorrow. If it's that great, if it jumps 10%, it don't matter. Because if it's that great, it's going to do 200%. The fact you missed the first 10 is irrelevant, right? So, there was something else I wanted to add that was building on what you said. Right. It's a thing I have a real issue with, right? Quite often, we look at a new stock and we fall in love with a new stock and we're convinced a new stock's the best thing on earth. But the simple reality is, however much research we do on that stock, we do not know it as well as we know stocks in our portfolio that we've held for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years, where we've had loads of results, loads of history. We've known the personalities come and go in the management teams. We know how the share price tends to move, its volatility and whatever. And it's like, all of a sudden, we're going to ditch something we understand and know really well. We want to get a divorce because we've seen this bird down a local pub. You know what I mean? And that's really what it is, you know. And I just think, you know, we need.
Don't say the B word, mate. Come on, stop.
What?
You've seen a nice lady. Don't use the B word. Come on.
Oh. Yeah. Okay.
Don't get yourself in trouble again, mate. Peter.
What are
Don't
you doing?
Yourself into, you're not down the pub.
Mate, I'm talking about a green parrot. You saw a green parrot. Don't get rid of your budgerie car because you saw a green parrot. Simple as that. Nice green parrot down the pub. Every pub's got a green parrot. Everyone knows that.
Oh, my gosh. No, it's a good point. And sometimes the best.
I think we lost the point in order.
No, don't reiterate your point and do it sensibly and cleanly. What Pete is saying, to reiterate his point, is the fact sometimes the best stock isn't the new stock. It's already in your portfolio. That's what Pete's trying to say, in a very long-winded way.
Yeah,
which is why these podcasts, last for 90 minutes rather than 1 hour. Which we're always trying to do, because it goes right round the blank houses. Okay?
It goes right round the pub.
Oh my God. Right, Pete, I'm going to share a stock of mine, which I got a nudge from.
Oh, cool.
Last year, Pete. There's a chap on Twitter, and his name is Deirdre Doom. Yeah. Have you heard of that chap?
Yeah.
And we were converting last year. His Twitter handle is @mydeargdoom. Yeah. And he came to our very, very first Twin Peaks Investing Live, Pete, back in 2018,
2019. He's a good guy.
Yeah, came up from Ireland for the full on mellow and came to our little thing at the end of the day and was giving us some questions. So I've really got a lot of time for him. And we were having a conversation last year, and I think I was talking about BT and telecoms, and I was getting into that space and had already bought BT and all the rest of it. So we're having a conversation about telecoms and 5G and all the rest of it. And he said, you might want to have a look at Nokia. Right. Everyone knows Nokia, the old brick phones and all the rest of it, was the numero uno, the Apple of their day, and then became the Betamax of their day. The interesting thing about it, when I went away digging, and I did a lot of digging on Nokia, I was like, why would anyone want to buy Nokia? The interesting thing about Nokia is that they were the numero uno in the telecom space, mobile telephone space. And they have got a staggering array of IP and patents. And every now and then, this company comes out and says and does something, and they go, can't do that. That IP, that patent belongs to us. And they've beaten X, Y, and Z litigation-wise and blah, blah, blah. However, I've not bought it for the litigation wins. It's not a litigation buy for me. It's a recovery place. I bought it last year, sub euros. And near to 3.5, and it slowly but surely ebbed up and ebbed up and ebbed up. And obviously we moved on to 5G. We're moving at some point in the next year and a half, 2 years, to 6G. But interestingly enough, what's caught my eye recently, the results came out and the results are really, really good. And they've come out and they're now developing and have developed Nokia tablets, Pete. Yeah.
Okay.
Not phones, tablets.
Yeah.
Little tablets, wow. Mate. So I'm looking at the fact that that could create more revenue for them going forward. So that's why I'm mentioning that to people today, because I suspect going forward, there's more to it down the pipe for this company. It's recovered already. I'm up quite well on the shares, but it's very, very interesting what's going on regarding their development and what they're going in. And obviously they're following a lot of other companies regarding the tech and what's available for mobile data and all the rest of it. Could they recover more?
Is it denominated in dollars or in euros or what? Because it's
both.
On SharePoint. Okay. Is it listed?
You can get it in both. You can get it in euros. I've got it in euros. You can get it in euros and you can buy it in dollars, depending on which exchange you're going to use and purchase it on. They came out and said they've sorted their lives out, basically. It's been a long, long, difficult journey for them. You know, they've watched their cake being eaten by Apple, essentially, over the last 15 years. And now they're setting themselves out properly. They're getting things sorted out. They're predicting revenue is going to be up at 22 billion. It's like, really? Does Nokia still generate revenue? Yes, they're still milking it regarding revenue. And they're talking about doing a 600 million euro share buyback scheme, Pete.
That's a lot. Yeah? Yeah.
So that could help. Yeah, it's a lot of money to you know, get rid of shares for. So it's still recovering. It's still restructuring. And I bought it last year, nearer to 3.5 euros each. Last week it was nearer to six, nearer to 5.5-ish. It's a recovery play for me. It's one of them, keep under the locker and see what happens. It's an interesting, another telecom stock. So that goes in with my BT play as well.
Well, I'm looking on SharePad and at 569.5 cents, guessing that's euros, I think it must be. It's showing on SharePad has been on a forecast PE of 13.2, falling to 12 2 years out. I mean, those are attractive PEs to me. You know, that is verging on the cheap. You know, but for the quality of something like Nokia, I think that's good. And you're getting a forecast yield of 1.9%, rising to 2.6%. Looking at this, they're saying market cap of 24. Well, I'm not sure what's going on here. SharePad's normally really good on the currencies. And it says
the market cap is 34 billion euros at the minute.
Right. Well, it could be right then. So ShearPad is saying 24 billion pounds. You're saying they're doing share buybacks of 600 million odd. Was that dollars or euros or whatever?
Euros.
Euros. Are still a substantial amount. And it says the borrowing is so 24 billion market cap, but the borrowing's only 1 billion. That's actually very low borrowing for a company of that size with those kind of revenues, with that kind of free cash flow. I think that's a really good looking stock.
Yeah, it's unloved, Pete. It's still unloved. It's not. No one talks about Nokia. In fact, it might as well be classed as, you know, back in the day when we used to mock the Skoda car. They peaked back in.
Yeah, I got a feeling.
99, 2000, Pete. And they've been unloved ever since.
They cannot
compete against Apple, and Apple are the go-to company. So they're just trying to just get back to a point of respect. I think respectability.
Yeah, I got a feeling my mate Jordan in Maidenhead owns these. I'm pretty sure he does. Looking at the chart, it's sort of got itself into a bit of a sideways range over about 6 months or something. And if it can break above it, it looks like about 650. That must be euros. If it can get above 650 euros, then that would be a very bullish sign. So yeah, I like that, mate. Fundamentals great.
Let me just throw this at you, Pete. right? The share price low, right? Going back over the past 20 years, right? 22 years. June the 29th, 2012, €1.98.
Wow.
Yeah. The high, €53.67, April the 28th, 2000. That's how far they've come down.
Were both dates the 28th of April? Was that coincidence?
No, they weren't both 28th of April, unless I'm getting my bearings wrong. No. June the 29th, 2012, and April 28th, 2000.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. So, yeah. So 5G, AI, big data, and also a little semi-play on the infrastructure of the metaverse and the fact people need big data and 5G and 6G to actually interact with the Oculus and all the rest of it via their mobiles, if they're going to do that, you know. And also,
I used to work in the telecom sector, so I got a bit of a feel for it. And the interesting thing with Nokia is that, you know, it's Finnish and whatever, but it's one of Finland's great companies. It gets a lot of, I'm not saying state support, but let's just say the Finnish government is pretty favorable to Nokia. And I, you know, that's going to help them, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
That's interesting. Yeah. Mate, I've got a stock here.
Give us your stock, mate.
Yeah, I think it's one we've discussed before. It's one I hold, but it had blinking good results the other day and totally caught everybody out. And that is good old IGG, IG Index, the spread betting company. Came out, the story with IGG, for me, it's really an income stock. You know, you get a flipping good dividend. I'll check the numbers in a minute. You get a nice dividend. But when you look over time, it's history over like 15 years. It's just steadily risen. So you're getting steady, nice capital gains, as well as a pretty juicy dividend, which tends to rise. What happened with IG was they bought a company called Tasty Trade, which is like an options broker or something in America. And at the time of the buy, all of the analysts and all of the experts said, oh, no, terrible buy. They were overpaid. It's absolute rubbish. And the shares got absolutely caned, down like 12% or something on the day. It was pretty nasty. But those latest results show that the Tasty Trade acquisition is actually looking pretty good. And maybe June Felix, or I think that's her name, the CEO, maybe she does know what's going on. And it gives them a good step into the American market where they've never been in before. And, you know, I just think IG is a canny operator. It's the, you know, they invented spread betting. We've definitely had that discussion on this podcast before, because I'm sure I've mentioned them a while back. And I just think it's a great company. To give you them numbers that I was saying about, so looking on SharePad, on my little tablet, 7-inch tablet, that's filling in while I'm waiting for it to load. Right, so going on the thing, IGG, punch it in, do the what's it, press the button. Right, forward, blimey, I mean, forecast PE, 9.5. 2-year forecast PE, 9.2. This is at £7.74. Forecast dividend, 5.7%. I mean, 5.7%, that is a lot. 2-year forecast dividend, 6.5. So, you know, it just stacks up. I mean, obviously, the fly in the ointment is if we get big rises in interest rates, then a stock I mentioned earlier, PHP, Primary Health Properties, that one's going to find life hard if interest rates go up loads, because obviously discount, you know, will it be more attractive? You know, you'll just put the money in the bank account rather than buying an income stock. But the great thing with PHP and with IGG is that they've got good histories of growth, and the outlook for them, the chances are they can still keep growing. And so I think, yeah, they're not exciting. They're not your aim tiddler that's going to jump 50% tomorrow. But as a tuck it away, leave it, take your hands off it, stop playing with it, right? It's never a good idea to play with it. You all know that. And,
Pete,
you know, well, everyone knows that. Everyone knows that, mate. I'm just saying, I'm saying it how it is, which is what we always do. And, yeah, you just leave it alone and just let it do its thing, and it will keep delivering a nice steady dividend, I expect, and you'll do all right on it. That's my thinking.
Whether you are an experienced or new investor, you know how valuable it is to conduct portfolio enhancing analysis and to have easy access to data that will give you the edge. As a Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener, you can access an exceptional offer via ShareePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. This special Twin Peaks offer is available to new subscribers only, and you can subscribe using the promo code TWINPETES. The incredible and exclusive offer means that monthly subscribers will get their second month free, and annual subscribers will get their 13th month free. Sign up and subscribe to ShareePad today using the TWINPETES promo code, and you can save up to £69. Visit shareScope.co.uk/sharepad for further details and subscribe to the investing and trading analysis and data you need.
I want to share a bit of news here, which really made me cheer yesterday and today. I'm big on the best people and the best person getting the job. And unfortunately, in the city and you know, in and around where we are and jobs and employment, sometimes the best people don't get the jobs. And I'm not, no, this is not going down a political route. Although some people might be thinking he's going to say the B word in a minute. I'm not going to say the B word. I'm talking about female CEOs, Pete. And yesterday, your share, if you're still holding it, Pets at Home announced that Lisa McGowan was going to become their new group chief executive officer, their new CEO, from the 1st of June 2022. Yeah, this year. It's got a great, comes from great pedigree, and it's brilliant that she's able to join the leadership team and add greater diversity to the board. And then following that today, the first female CEO of a house builder, Taylor Wimpey, announced that Jenny Daly was going to be appointed their CEO coming on after the close of the AGM on the 26th of April. And again, more diversity. But that's the first woman allowed, you know, chosen, whichever word you want to use, to be in charge of a house builder. So I'm absolutely thrilled that those two individuals have been given the recognition that they rightfully deserve to lead those two companies, and power to the elbow. And I want to see more and more females leading companies, because I'm of a view, I've always said this, and I keep saying this on this podcast, female investors are the better and the best investors long term.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah? And the female leaders out there are absolutely shaking it up regarding some of the stocks. And the CEO of Aviva has gone in and just shaken things up. And now suddenly that stock is Flavor Flav. You know, they're getting up, sorting things out, paying dividends, you know, redistributing. And the share price hasn't been higher for a number of years. So it can be done. It should be done. And if the right person's in the right job doing the right things, it shouldn't matter what gender they are. But, you know, why not? You know, I'm trying to speak to some fund managers for the other podcast that I do, which is called the Investing Matters podcast. And you should be able to find that on Twitter and on Spotify. And a lot of those, a lot of the investment industry is I would say it's probably 89% males, the fund managers. And these female leaders of various different entities are finding it difficult to actually get people to give them the money to manage and actually do well. And the vast majority of the female fund managers outperform their male peers, but people would rather give the money to the male peers to underperform. It's just madness. You know what I mean?
Crazy.
So we'll see what happens with that. We'll see what happens with that, mate. But I'm just wanting to share that news. I think it's absolutely brilliant.
It's funny because I tend to... I've never empirically studied it or analysed it or whatever, but I just get the sense that when a company is run by a female CEO, things tend to go better. And I'm very happy to hear that a female is going to be running Pets at Home. What I was a little bit disappointed by was that there was no mention as to whether she owns a hamster or a goldfish or anything. But I think we'll just have to take it as read.
Well, I'm not sure if it was a prop. You know, these people like to use props every now and then, politicians. But when she was, when the lady at Pets at Home obviously was taking a picture of her in the Times, I think, was it the Times yesterday? There was a picture of her with looked like a black Labrador, she was with a black dog. So, yeah, we'll see what happens with that.
That's great, because I was absolutely gutted when I read the update that she was joining, and she was saying, I'm really pleased to be joining a great company like Pets at Home, da da da. I was hoping she'd say, I've got a black Labrador, but that didn't come out, you know. That's one of those
things. I don't know if that's her dog or whether she's taken with one.
Mate, if it's in the picture, that's good enough for me.
Cool. I want to quickly, because obviously, as everyone will keep hearing all the time now, there's a group of us that are ambassadors now for Memphis, UK, the charity which we did the Twin Peaks Challenge for. There's a really good friend of mine. He's an absolute legend when it comes to doing all manner of crazy stunts and things to raise money. He's an absolute machine. He's called Darren Bradbury. You can find him at dbradbury888. Okay. He's cycling from London. Yeah, he'll be at the Chelsea football ground in April. And he'll be going from Chelsea all the way up to the Newcastle football ground. So it'll be stopping off en route. Obviously, he's stopping in Leicester. He's going to York. He's going to go to Newcastle. He's going to be doing that. And he's looking for people who want to join him on his little jaunt, as we say. So you can join him at any time regarding that particular stunt that he's doing. So if you want to join him, you can DM at Memphis UK. If you want to make a donation, you can go to Darren's Just Giving page, which is justgiving.com/fundraising. Thames to Times. That's thametotyne. And you can find that Just Giving page there. So you can make a donation or you can join in. We must have lots of cyclists out there that follow the Twin Peaks podcast. So if you want to get in touch with Darren, get in touch with Darren. If you want to DM me, DM me. If you want to DM Memphis, please do so. And you can join in anytime along route and just cheer him on or cycle with him for a couple of miles just to keep him company. So if you want to do that, please just get in touch with me, Memphis, or Darren at dbradbury888. Okay, Pete, have you got any more that you want to share?
I was going to say, it sounds great. And if you're a cyclist, then might as well join in. Did you want to mention another stock, did you say?
You mentioned another stock, mate. You go for it.
Yeah, one that might be worth looking at. It's one I wrote this one because I have my list that's got all the stuff on it. And I wrote down on here HEAD, HEAD, which is Headlam, which is one that does flooring stuff, you know, sort of vinyl flooring. They've got a massive, massive contracts with the NHS and that, where any new NHS buildings, you know, when you go to those booms, they've all got those sort of like grey floors, grey vinyl plastic kind of floors. A lot of that's supplied by Headlam. Recent results were good from what I wrote that down about 2 weeks ago. So from memory, results were good. But it's a really, really decent company, you know. I'd imagine it's been caught up in the usual market malaise that we've been suffering. And I think, you know, concerns about input prices and all the usual. looking at SharePad, it's showing forecast PE of 13.6, dropping to 11.6, with a forecast yield of 3.4, two-year forecast yield of 4.3. According to SharePad, it looks like there's actually net cash. So those numbers are attractive numbers. Obviously, you need to, you know, be looking. I don't hold it. You don't hold it, Pete, do you?
No, I don't, no.
Now, you need to look at the numbers and all that kind of thing. The shares have been dropping back, but they look like they might be starting to turn up again. So, yeah, you know, maybe it's an interesting time to be looking at them. You get a nice dividend. It certainly doesn't look expensive. It's got a very good history of doing well. I actually know a guy. He came to the Ely Bash. Who was a finance director there or whatever. So I'm pretty sure he might have been. Is there another flooring company on the market?
Well, there's quite a few flooring companies, Pete.
I'm pretty sure it was Headlam he's at. Anyway,
okay,
that's neither here nor there, really. But the point is, decent company. Interesting, because when you look at the chart, for sort of 6 months, it was dropping, and then it sort. Oh, I don't know if you. I don't think I quite let you see that. There we go. It was sort of dropping, and it looks like it's sort of dropped, and now it's sort of leveled off, and maybe starting to go up. So yeah, could be a good time to be having a look at it.
Okie dokie. I'm going to just mention this other stock, Pete. I already own Bunzl, so this is almost like a similar sort of business that I've looked at as well. And the reason why it's on my radar was when I was researching Bunzl, it came onto my radar. But also, the share price has been drifting off, despite quite positive news. And they came out with a trading update last month. So this company is Diploma. The ticker symbol is DPLM. And it operates a decentralized collection of distribution businesses which supply specialized industrial healthcare products and services to a wide range of niche markets. So that's why it's caught on my radar. The focus is on supply of low cost but essential products such as seals for hydraulic cylinders and so on and so forth. The major revenue generated are consumer products as well. So it's all about essential problems, essential product solutions, and so on and so forth. And they've built up a long-term relationship with lots of different customers all around the world. And it's one of those sort of companies which focuses on growing through, or has in the past focused through, buying bolt-ons and small companies in growing niches. But it came out with a positive trading update last month. Share prices continue to drift. The performance was quite strong. Underlying revenue growth of 16%, driven by organic revenue initiatives and continued strong strength. Rate of growth was ahead of the 12% generated in the previous financial year on year, and reported revenue growth was 28%. However, the share price drifts. So you've got a share price peak, 52-week peak of £35 per share, 35.04. Yeah. A 52-week low of 22.86, and it's currently sitting at 27.36. It's drifting from a high of, as I just said, recent high of 35. Back in November, it's now sitting at 27.36. So on my radar, I don't own it. I'm just suggesting it as a stock to go away and do a bit of research on. The past year to date, it's down 18%. We're only in February, folks, down nearly 19%. Over the past 12 months, it's up 15, just shy of 15%. And obviously, it's a bit of a tiny little tiny percentage of a dividend yield as well, Pete. But I'll let you do the share scope bits on that if you want.
Yeah, I mean, that's where I'd have to be cautious. I mean, I think you're right. I think Diploma, DPLM, is a very good company, and it's grown by doing a lot of acquisitions, a lot of small acquisitions. It's done them well. It's integrated them well. Those kind of business model. I mean, often these very, very acquisitive companies can be a bit of a problem, you know, but there are certain companies. What's the other one? Keyword System, KWS springs to mind. There are certain companies that are very good at doing these small acquisitions, and they've proven themselves over some time. And Diploma is definitely in that category. It's obviously very cyclical. You know, it's the kind of thing that when the poo hits the what's it, you know, it's going to tank. But at this stage...
It is. But the other interesting thing about it, Pete, is that it hasn't got a lot of debt. It's only got about £181 million worth of debt, right?
Yeah, that's good.
It's sitting. Yeah. It's paying a this word that people should keep an eye out for when a company says this as well. It's paying a progressive dividend, Pete. Yeah,
and that helps buy the shares. Yeah,
it helps because if you hold it for a long term, which is what it's done really well long term, this company, you're compounding the dividend all the time. You know what I mean? And that's the beauty of having a company.
And the dividend is growing. The growing dividend makes it attractive. Looking at on SharePad, it's got forecast PE of 29.8 and 2-year 27.6. You know, those are not generous numbers. I mean, I think that could easily be 23. So you could see it fall a bit more. Forecast yield 1.6%, 2-year forecast yield 1.8%. Obviously, if it beats earnings expectations, beats forecasts, then those PEs are wrong and it's actually cheaper. So, you know, you always got to bear that in mind. It's good business.
Yeah, good point. And I'm going to talk about total returns now, Pete. This is what interests me about holding a stock long term. And I'm hoping that more and more people, when they find a good stock, we'll be able to hold it beyond the average of what is now 18 months. You know, everyone's a momentum trader. So if you can get beyond 3, 4, 5 years and hold it for 10 years.
18 right? minutes.
Yeah, for some people. 8 o'clock until 8:18 a.m. and they're in and out. Right, so 10-year total returns annualized for Diploma, Pete, okay? 22.15. 5-year, 22.65. 3-year, 29.3. And then we get a little bit of a flip. It's 17.64 in the past year, total returns including dividends. Yeah. But it's been rolling over for the past 3 months. Year to date, it's just getting beaten up. Yeah. So I'm looking at it thinking, crikey. Okay. It's gone from 35. It's going down to 26. So I'm watching it and watching it. Do I need another company that's similar to Bunzl? Probably not, you know, but maybe I've gotten out of Bunzl what I was going to get out of Bunzl, and maybe I'll swap one for the other. I don't know yet, but it's a global entity, progressive dividend. It's long-term growth. They've always executed with what they've purchased and bolted on. Can they continue that sort of company? That sort of growth? I don't know. But the beauty about the stocks that I'd like to buy is, it's not companies that everyone else is shouting the rooftops about. When I'm looking for long-term investments, I'm looking for stocks that are going to do the business nice and quiet, that traders and the short-term investors aren't going to get involved in it. You know, the stocks that have done extremely well for me long-term have been the ones that no one else is interested in, that no one's talking about. You know, it's the reason why I very rarely talk about the stocks I own anymore, because I prefer to them to just be like, what do they call those things, Pete, that grow in the dark? What are they called?
Mushrooms.
Truffles.
Truffles. Mushrooms. Chocolate truffles.
That and mushrooms as well. But I prefer them to grow in the dark, mate. You know what I mean? That's what I prefer.
I mean, those historic returns you read out in Diploma are stunning. You know,
That's no precedent for what they might do going forward, mate. They might be minus 29% over the next 10 years.
Yeah, you guarantee it. Yeah, I know. But,
no guarantee.
No, the thing is, what's driven that is the acquisitions, those bolt-on acquisitions. And when they've got such a small amount of debt, that shows they've got space to do more acquisitions. And it's those acquisitions that will drive the increase in earnings. So that forecast PE of 27, 29, you know, could be way too high, because in reality, it will probably do a load of acquisitions, beat expectations because it's added more earnings from buying them in, and just keep motoring on. So, yeah, there's a lot to like.
Who knows, mate? This is the beauty of just looking off the radar. You know, a lot of people get stimulated by lots of people conversing about stocks on Twitter, and they go, oh, XYZ is talking about it. But sometimes go away and just find stocks that's off the radar. You know, let someone discover your stock that you already bought. You know, don't go buying something that someone else has bought, because you don't know what's going to happen to it down the pipe. Right. We've once again gone over the hour, Pete. So
no.
failed miserably.
I can't believe
failed
that.
Miserably. Oh, my gosh. Right. I want to thank everybody again for listening to us and rambling on with this general conversation. Thank you all for your great feedback regarding number 67 that we had that went live on video on YouTube. Thanks for the numbers. If you're checking it out on YouTube, if you liked podcast number 67, please subscribe to the channel. If you're listening to 68 now, please subscribe to the YouTube channel and other channels that you utilize to listen to this podcast. We really, really appreciate your support with all the stuff that Pete and I are doing. Please support Pete's charity, the Backup Charity, and make a donation on the Just Giving page. And if you see us on Twitter and you want to make a comment and you want to give us some feedback regarding this, good, bad, or indifferent, please do so. If you like something on this podcast, share it with somebody else. Share it, retweet it, comment about it. Tell us, you know, and we'll keep on trying to improve this podcast for you. If you've seen two podcasts and you're absolutely fed up and you're like, please, guys, do not do another video, we'll think about that as well. All right? So
absolutely.
So until, you know, 2 weeks' time, thank you all so much for your support. Please stay safe. Please do what you can, if you can, in your communities for anybody else. Take care. God bless you all. Lots of love from the Twin Peaks.
Thank you. See you next time.
This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with ShareePad from ShareScoop, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.